in! The US go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Boy, it'll try a long hit! What a goal from Lloyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity! Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Off we go tonight here following Jerome Solomon. Welcome into Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, and it's always presented by the legendary Daspit Law Firm. Last night was a great show. We had lots of fun. Great callers, great guests on that program. Let's do it again tonight. I'm up for hearing from you. It's 713-780-3776. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. Also, our YouTube channel, Soccer Matters. Subscribe, like, comment. These things all make a difference in keeping Soccer Talk on the air. So if you like the show, you like the conversation, you like the interviews and opinions, then subscribe and help us with the numbers and data. Boy, I'm shilling here, right? Jeez, that's a shameless promotion. If analytics work in soccer, then I guess it can work for Soccer Matters. Our producer, as always, is producer Guillermo. Podcast of this show at Spotify, Google, Apple, ESPN 97.5. Again, 713-780-3776. Soccer Matters question of the week is the following. Who is the greatest African-born footballer in Premier League history? Who is the greatest African-born footballer in Premier League history? There's so many good potential players here that you could put in that category. 713-780-3776. I know it's subjective, but who do you like? Who is the greatest African-born footballer in Premier League history? And the reason we put that one out at 713-780-3776 is because the African Cup of Nations is on. Now, if you want on the air tonight to talk football, you got to do it in segment one, this one right now. Okay, because in segment two, we go to Barcelona, Spain. TV3's Jordi Sunyer joins us in the next segment. And then joining us live to close the show out here tonight, very graciously, Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. We have a lot to talk to Pat about and really looking forward to that conversation as he will join us later. All right, so as we get into it today, the African Cup of Nations was in full force here once again. We started off with Nigeria and the Ivory Coast. Now, these were some heavyweights going at it. The Ivory Coast, by the way, is the host nation. They had the support of the home crowd, yet it is Nigeria. William Ikang from the penalty spot in the 55th minute.
Up against Fofana, slams it in the back of the net, and Nigeria have the lead. The host nation are behind here at the Africa Cup of Nations. Celebrations for Nigeria. Penalty won by Osimhen, converted by Troost Ekong. Super Eagles are flying high.
I can assure you, Super Eagles fans in Houston, and I think we have maybe 50 to 70,000 Nigerians that live in Houston. Super Eagles fans in Houston were going nuts. I believe that is the first time Nigeria has ever won at the Ivory Coast. And the Ivory Coast is the host country, so there was a massive, you know, home support there for Ivory Coast. But Nigeria gets a very, very important win against after an opening draw. Egypt and Ghana today. Mustafa Mohamed to tie the game for Egypt. This in the 74th minute.
Hamdi picks it up. Trying to play the 1-2, a little bit of a misunderstanding, but Trezeguet's got the ball back, it's in the back of the net! This is just madness! This is madness! We absolutely love it! Remarkable! Mustafa Mohamed scoring an equaliser for Egypt, and they're back in business.
Now, this is why the African Cup of Nations is so fun. It is madness. That commentator nailed it. It is madness. It's a little off the rails. The one thing you have to take out of the Egypt-Ghana game, and Houston Liverpool supporters and those that support Liverpool who are listening in around the country and maybe even overseas here tonight, because we do get overseas listeners. Mo Salah went off injured, kind of clutching the back of his hamstring area. So we'll see if he can even potentially return in the AFCON. It may not look good, and we'll see what happens with him coming back and what the severity of this muscular injury is, because this has a Premier League implications, no question. Okay, also going on today, the Copa del Rey in Spain, round of 16. Now, after Barcelona got thrashed this weekend, destroyed, gave up two goals in the first 10 minutes, first half hat trick for Vinicius Jr., Real Madrid destroyed them. There's all kinds of pressure and Xavi, all kinds of things going on in Barcelona. We'll talk more about that with Jordi Sunyer in the next segment. This is a can't-miss interview with him on everything going on at Barcelona. And we also talk about Real Madrid in that section as well. But so they had to turn around today this quickly. They're at third division Salamanca. They actually go behind in this game. So they were down 1-0, but Barcelona would come back. This is Koundé scoring their second goal in the 69th minute. Ultimately, this is the game winner.
Kubasi, Koundé. For the shot, and my word, what a fine strike from the French defender. Jules Koundé has just rifled Barcelona into the lead in the 69th minute.
So 3-1 is how that one ends. Then you also had, which was really, really spicy, the Copa del Rey round of 16 between Atletico Madrid at home against Real Madrid. And this is after, again, Real Madrid just smoked Barcelona on the weekend in La Liga play. Well, it goes to extra time. In the 100th minute, Antoine Griezmann gets isolated with Vinicius Jr., who does not put on a very good exhibition of individual defending. We'll talk about it in a second. Griezmann gets behind him. He's at an oblique angle about 3 yards off the end line. He lashes it in, and that becomes the game-winning goal.
Here's a run. Here's a chance. Here's a brilliant goal! Left off at the Metropolitano by the club record goal scorer.
And that's why you want him playing higher up the field.
What was amazing here was, you know, typical Diego Simeone going nuts, hugging people, punching guys in the back, you know, the man in black going absolutely wild. Now, here's a really interesting thing that I don't think too many people around the country will even talk about. But if you know Argentine football, there's a man named Jorge Grifa. And Jorge Grifa passed away a couple of days ago. He was the defender at Atletico Madrid. He passed away at 88. He was Argentine. He was a player at Newell's Old Boys, and he was also an excellent defender at Atletico Madrid. But he also made his name as a very, very famous trainer and talent scout. So this is the guy that identified people like Gabriel Batistuta, Carlos Tevez, Jorge Valdano, Ever Banega, Fernando Gago, on and on it goes. But Jorge Grifa is a big name, and you have to know Argentine soccer. Unfortunately, I have a lot of Argentine friends and people that follow that. And I was reminded of this today by my good friend Rodrigo de Luna. But Jorge Grifa, look him up. Amazing history, amazing images, and kind of fitting that a former great Atletico Madrid defender who passed away a couple of days ago, pretty fitting that Atletico Madrid won that game today against Real Madrid. So they both advance, Barcelona and Real Madrid, in the Copa del Rey. All right, so a lot of really interesting stuff. Again, I'll put it out, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. Who is the greatest African-born player in the Premier League? And I will ask producer Guillermo, I'm putting him on the spot, who would you pick as the most famous or your greatest African-born player in the Premier League? And it can be for a variety of reasons. It's not necessarily from a personal standpoint, who won the most trophies, or it's who you liked. Who would it be?
I'm gonna have to say the man Mohamed Salah. You know, this guy is, he came into the league, you know, he was in Chelsea, went to Roma, back into Liverpool. Everybody was questioning the signing. He took the world by storm. People were comparing him to Messi, to the greatest players in the world at the time. So I hadn't, you know, just the amount of goals that he has scored, the things that he does for the club, even till this day, I got to give it to him.
That's a good call. A lot of people are going with him. A lot of people going Didier Drogba, Chelsea. What about Yaya Toure of Manchester City? I mean, you know, just an absolute pillar for Man City. Or Patrick Vieira, Arsenal. By the way, it just stunted my memory here. You know two players that Jose Mourinho let go at Chelsea? One was Mo Salah, and another was Kevin De Bruyne. Isn't that something? Just goes to show you, everybody can't get it right all the time. And nobody does. That's pretty crazy, though, right? Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne, who will be battling for the Premier League title this year. But Mo Salah went off injured here today. 713-780-3776. What about Michael Essien of Chelsea? The Bison. Versatile. All-around great midfield player. What a talent he was. Who else you got, Guillermo? I got Sadio Mane, Senegal, right? Now at Bayern Munich.
I love the Yaya Toure shout. It's just like, I feel like his best years, you know, like, because you're talking about a Premier League, and Yaya Toure, you know, he excelled in other leagues and stuff like that. That's why he didn't really come to mind, but that was a great shout.
Here's another good one. This is one that you probably won't know. There was a guy on Leeds named Tony Yeboah. Tony Yeboah hit goals of power, hit bombs. Incredible. J.J. Okocha might have been the greatest entertainer. I'm not sure he was the winner, but he was a great entertainer. Patrick Vieira, Arsenal. Marcel Desailly, Ghana. Okay, couple of things of real interest here, and I want to try to get these in very quickly before we go to break. Coming up in the next segment, we will have from Barcelona, Spain, Jordi Sunyer from TV3, so more La Liga talk. Then the final segment, it'll be Pat Onstad. But so Albert Elise apparently is getting some interest about coming back to Major League Soccer. Don't know how serious that is. Romel Kyoto signed for a team in Azerbaijan called Tractor FC. Now, this is pretty bizarre because if you go to Tractor FC and you read about them, it's in East Azerbaijan. And they play in the Persian Gulf Pro League, which is basically Iran. The fans of this club have a real heavy political leaning and racist leaning. You go look at their Wikipedia, there's a whole section on how this team fans come to the game just because they feel comfortable in a group saying all these really derogatory things. Pretty bizarre. It's kind of a strange move for Romel Kyoto. Persian Gulf Pro League. All right. All right, coming up, Jordi Sunyer, TV3. Going to hit a break here. Show brought to you, as always, by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. Big news, Dallas will get the World Cup final in 2026.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. A lot of people in Houston, a lot of people around the world watching the 4-1 Super Cup win, Real Madrid over Barcelona, and joining us now from TV3 in Barcelona, also play-by-play man, he is Jordi Sunyer. Jordi, thank you very much. Happy 2024 to you.
Happy 2024. Thanks for having me again on the show.
All right, let's
Talk about the fallout. You know, obviously there's a lot of criticism of Xavi now. What's the sense of this 4-1 dismantling by Real Madrid over Barcelona?
Well, you know, in Barcelona, big victories are very big and big defeats are also very big. So as the old tale says, probably the king is naked, and the king was naked several months or years ago. But, you know, everything explodes when you lose a game against Real Madrid 4-1. It seems that the message Xavi wants to transmit to the to his players is not arriving to them. You see, there's no pressing. There's no will of recovering the ball as quickly as Pep Guardiola's Barcelona did in their time. You see that there's no fluidity in Barcelona's play. You can't compare, for example, how the league leaders Girona are attacking defenses that play very deep and how Barcelona do try to attack these defenses so horizontally. You see Girona, they are so vertical, so direct, so quick, and in the speed of the ball. This is not happening these days with Barcelona, and it's clear that they are not finding the right path. They are not playing well, and Xavi needs to find solutions, but isn't able to find one.
Jordi, is it realistic to think that you can try to recreate those great tiki-taka teams that were led by Messi? I mean, how much of that really is in the game model of Xavi in the current team?
I think it's 100% in his idea of football. But Pep Guardiola always said, in my idea of play, it's not that the players have to run. It's the ball that has to run very quickly, and the players have to adapt to the speed of the ball. So many people around here may say Barcelona are not winning because they are not adapting to new trends in the world of football. It seems that football is going to a more physical game, to a more physical approach, counter-attacking, footballers that play like that are real athletes, physically very strong. And Barcelona keep playing or are trying to keep playing with the likes of Xavi, Iniesta, that type of play. But of course, you need to teach the players, be them physical or not, how to circulate the ball as quickly as the Barcelona style of play needs. And they are not doing this because, as I was saying before, if you watch Barcelona play, they are so horizontal. The ball is not moving as fast as the team needs. If you don't move the ball quickly, you won't be able to break any defense. For opposition, it's easier to defend sitting deep. A team that's not able to moving the ball quickly, is not able to move the ball quickly and try to find or to break new spaces or create new spaces into that defense. So that's what's, in my opinion, that's one of the things that's happening right now with Barcelona.
He's Jordi Sunyer. He's TV3 in Barcelona. Great friend of this show, and we really appreciate him coming on here. All right, so 4-1 Super Cup defeat, Vinicius hat trick. You know, what you just said is pretty important. Do you get the sense that Xavi isn't evolving as maybe the modern game is, and he's maybe stuck in tactics that were successful at a time period, but may not be as successful now as well? I get the ball circulation thing too, by the way.
I always said, and I think I told this in another interview with you some months ago, there has been, in my opinion, after Pep Guardiola and after Tito Villanova, there has been only one manager in Barcelona that understood how to keep the idea of Barcelona's style and at the same time blend it with the new trends or this more physical approach to the game. And it was Luis Enrique. You know, Luis Enrique had these three men up front. He had Messi, Suarez, and Neymar. He kept, of course, Sergio Busquets in midfield because Sergio Busquets was the linchpin of that team and he needed him. But it was, let's put it like this, he stretched the team. So it was not like traveling all together. That team could be more direct to try to find that three fantastic players, those three fantastic players up front. But it was, I think, an intelligent evolution of the Barcelona style of play. I think Xavi is, as he learned how to play under Pep Guardiola, under Of course, Johan Cruyff, for the philosophy that he always installed in Barcelona after Luis Enrique, I think he's trying to be very orthodox with the tiki-taka, as you say. But if you don't convince the players, if you don't prepare your players to play high-speed football, you may have the best of ideas, but if you are not able to transmit what you want from the players to them, that's what's happening right now. And of course, there have been this week several meetings between Xavi and the players, between Chairman Joan Laporta and the players, but you won't get a solution only with a speech and trying to encourage them. No, I think it's a structural thing. You need to improve your training sessions. You need to enhance your drills. You need to work hard day by day by day to try to install this idea. It's true that Barcelona won the league last season, if you remember that. And of course, Xavi is saying in press conferences, and he's right, remember, I'm the man who won the league for Barcelona last year after all these years of crossing the desert. But was the style of play that we watched last season the best style of play that Barcelona has shown in last seasons? I really don't think so. So it's kind of like if Barcelona are stagnating in their idea, they want to play in a certain way, but they are not able, or Xavi is not able to find or to touch the right key in order to make the team play the way he wants.
He's Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. Seems the answer lies in the middle with the evolution of the tactics and the game model, and then also, obviously, the quality of players as well. Is it true, you think, that Xavi has lost part of the locker room? We're hearing that. And then Sergiño Dest came out at PSV saying, you know, he's on loan there. They're doing exceptionally well. He's doing well. That he does not want to come back and play for Xavi. Do you think he's lost some of the locker room?
I'll tell you something about two players, and I know this may sound a little bit demagogic, but there you have Eric Garcia, central defender, on loan to Girona. He was heavily criticized while at Barcelona, but now playing for league leaders Girona, he's one of the best defenders in the league. The other way around, Oriol Romeu, key player for Girona last season, signs for Barcelona. And he is, unfortunately, because he's a fantastic guy, but unfortunately, in footballing terms, he's a shadow of the player he used to be last season at Girona. So is it only a player's thing, or the manager has got a responsibility in all that? And that's why I was saying, I wouldn't say he's losing the locker room. Of course, you cannot 100% rely on what the players say in front of a mic, because they will always say, we are with the coach. We support him.
Got a great locker room. Everything's cozy. Everything's cozy. I love that. By the way,
you know that. There's never a perfect locker room
because there are unhappy people who aren't playing. It has to be a respectful locker room.
Did you do this when you were a pro also, telling your locker room was perfect? And
well, the problem with me is we only had one journalist, and he was trying to get out of there as quick as possible. So nobody was covering the game. But yeah, everything was good.
No, but seriously, I don't think he's lost the locker room, but there's probably a lack of communication, especially with players that come from a totally different locker room culture, I would say, like Robert Lewandowski, like Ilkay Gundogan. And these are players that, because of their footballing culture, if there's something that doesn't work, they say it publicly. And Ilkay Gundogan said that after the Real Madrid defeat in La Liga Clásico, if you remember, in the month of October. But at the same time, it's not only Xavi's fault. I must say this, because everyone around Barcelona, and the press pack included, bought this illusion that Chairman Joan Laporta sold to everyone when he became chairman again in 2021. But it's been nearly 3 years after that. And you still see Barcelona in financial turmoil. You still see strange sporting decisions, because Xavi, for example, would have liked to sign Zubimendi from Real Sociedad, a very good substitute for Sergio Busquets, a very similar type of player. Instead of that, they signed Oriol Romeu, who was the low-cost option in that list of defensive midfielders that Barcelona wanted. But then they signed Vitor Roque, 19 or 18-year-old Brazilian striker. Big question mark around him. You don't know what he's going to do. You sign Rafinha, and of course he hasn't met the expectations, for 60 million euros. And then you have no money for signing a player that could be key for Xavi Hernandez. So there have been also strange sporting decisions that need to be assessed to explain what's happening with Barcelona.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. A couple of quick ones here, Jordi. We'll knock these out. All right, so there's something kind of behind the scenes with Joan Laporta and Rafa Márquez. Tell us a little about that, because that's an interesting one.
I'll try to be as quick as possible. As you know, super agent Jorge Mendes, Portuguese agent Jorge Mendes, I wouldn't say he's controlling Barcelona, but he's making lots of businesses with Barcelona these days. And sporting director, former player Deco, Rafa Márquez, and also Juliano Belletti are all Jorge Mendes men. So there you have Juliano Belletti being appointed assistant manager for the B team of Barcelona, the team that Rafa Márquez is currently managing. I'm not sure if the relation between Xavi and Rafa Márquez is the best. Because in the position that Barcelona is right now, every success by Rafa Márquez and every defeat by Xavi is good for Rafa and bad for Xavi. And as you know, Barca are in a financial situation in which they cannot sign anyone. They cannot sign right now any player. They have no room for financial fair play. They cannot sign a new player. They cannot sign a new manager. So if Xavi got the sack, the only solution available is Rafa Márquez.
So, and he wants it. He wants it one day, doesn't he? No question.
I'm sure he wants it. Everyone would love to be the manager.
Let me take you into something else here real quick. And by the way, we got a really – Real Madrid, listen, we have to give them a lot of credit, and Carlo Ancelotti guiding the ship. This shows the void and the gap between the two teams now. But the guy that – I know Vinicius had the hat trick, but the player that I thought was exceptional, doing a lot of maybe subtle things, was Jude Bellingham.
It has been, I wouldn't say a surprise, but everyone knew that Real Madrid were signing a top-class player in Jude Bellingham. But I think few people expected him to be right now the best player probably in the league. Because and we have to give credit to Carlo Ancelotti for this, because he understood what which was the preferred or the favorite position for Jude Bellingham, which was the position in which Jude Bellingham could express himself the best in a football pitch. So he plays with freedom in this kind of number 10 position, but with room to play freely as like second striker or support striker to Vinicius and Rodrigo. And you see him, how he's playing, his key for Real Madrid. So he's playing fantastically well, but you have to give credit to Ancelotti. Great locker room director and great man to interpret and to understand what the players need, what the players want, what the team needs. And
one of the greatest managers in the history of the game. And
totally
and
agree.
Handles a team. And Bellingham, by the way, his all-around game is what I was really kind of focused on. He was tracking players. He was closing people down. He was doing a lot of very varied things in that game. All right, last one. All right, Luis Suarez to Inter Miami. What do those in Spain think of everything that's going on with Inter Milan? I mean, sorry, it should be Inter Milan. It's Inter Miami. What do they think of this project? Do they think it's a circus? Is it believable? What does Spain think about Inter Miami?
To put it just in a sentence, of course they will be happy playing together again, Messi, Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets, and Luis Suarez, but from a Barcelona or a Catalan perspective, it looks like an all-boys club. The all-boys reuniting again when they are in their late 30s. Of course, playing together again, they are close friends, all of them. This could give them this edge, knowing that they play together again and the happiness that they gives them. It could be an edge, but of course, they are not the players of yesteryear, probably with the exception of Lionel Messi, because he can't be. If you want, Lionel Messi can't be eternal. But let's see how it goes.
Lionel Messi can be eternal. That's a classic right there.
Honestly,
on the street, do people take this serious? How does that put MLS in the perception of the Spanish footballing fan?
No. I think the MLS has a good image, has a good perception between among Spanish fans, because you see the league is getting more and more professional, and it's not only let's say that Inter Miami could be a little bit against the trend, because if MLS was improving, was because of MLS capacity to attract young good players from Europe to play in the MLS. If you sign all the players, it could look like the MLS of yesteryear or the North American Soccer League of the 70s and 80s. If you only sign veteran players, it's a little bit against the trend. But of course, you're talking of Messi, Suarez, Busquets, world-class players. It goes a little bit against the trend, but I understand Inter Miami want to grow with these type of players, because they are still, especially with Lionel Messi, they are still huge brands. You saw that with Lionel Messi last season at Miami. It was a phenomenon. So I may understand that, even if I think it goes a little bit against the MLS trend.
Jordy, thank you as always. And listen, I think that's what makes it exciting. You know what I say? Inter Miami, buy everybody you can. You'll be something different in a league of parity. Jordy, thank you as always for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Right. Bye-bye.
The one and only Jordy Sunyer, TB3. You get great perspective from him each and every time he comes on the show. We'll take a break here. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10, Marquee Entertainment Center. Thursday night is steak night. It's a great place. Get out there. See Dave. Great whiskey, great beer offerings, and all your traditional English foods. Now if your first lover lets you down.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the show. LamontBrands.com. All of the proceeds of the T-shirts bought there and hats goes to the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation. So if you want to help us fight pediatric cancer, you want to wear your shirt proudly, that's where you go to do it. Big thank you to LamontBrands.com. Show is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Okay, we're really fortunate here because Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad is coming off a supporters event, and he joins us live now. Hey, Pat, how are you?
Hey, Glenn, how are you doing?
Happy New Year to you, and thank you very much for making the effort to do this right after a supporters event. I hope it went well.
Yeah, it went well. It's kind of our, I call it our guys behind the net, kind of drive our supporter culture, and it's all the different groups, El Battalion, Texan Army, you know, all the guys kind of get together, and they... it's a coordinated effort to make sure that they get behind our group. So it's always nice to talk to them, and they've always got some great ideas for us.
Excellent. Now, if I'm redundant tonight, let me apologize for it prior, but I want to get into a lot of stuff here because it's interesting. I heard your interview yesterday, so I'm not going to go over things, but this may be a little bit of a different audience. All right, can we start with Sebas Ferreira coming back on loan from Vasco da Gama? I know you get this one a lot. But I kind of liken his situation to Weston McKennie, who came back to Juventus, and people didn't think he was going to kind of earn his way back into things there. Well, he's done that in a big way. How do you feel Sebas is coming into this preseason? Does he look fit? Does he look motivated? And is he a guy that can truly make a comeback this year?
Yeah, well, I hope so. I mean, we're hoping he can, and I know from his perspective he is. I think last year in the season in 22 went pretty well for him. It was, I think he kind of thought, oh, well, 23 will just be pretty easy and I can cruise through it and I'll be fine. But, he didn't really come in prepared, I think, what we'd hope for at least. and he kind of struggled out of the gate. And Ben Olsen didn't have the history with him that, you know, Paulo Nagamura did. So it's tough for him to say, like, listen, he's not scoring here in preseason. He's not scoring in the beginning of the season. How can I keep playing him? And, you know, it was a difficult time for him. But I would say when you ask about motivation this year, I think Sebastian's come in much more motivated. Certainly in the first 3 days or any indication, he's scoring goals in training, which is great. You know, that gives Ben something to go, oh, okay, I hear what you and Asher are talking about. So I think that's important. But it's important for him to get his career back on track. He didn't score a goal even with Vasco da Gama or with us. So as a forward, you know, it's all about when are you getting your next goal? How's that going? So I hope he's motivated. He seems it. Certainly seems to be certainly ingrained well into our group, and hopefully he can continue.
Pat, it does seem you're a bit thin up front now without Corey Baird when we're talking about maybe the number nine of the striker position. Aliyu is here, a growing, maturing, very talented young player. Not sure what's going on with Thoro Farson in Hungary. But the options seem limited, which makes this, to me, seem like a real opportunity for Sebas to come back and reclaim this thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the plan. I mean, he's essentially replacing Corey Baird for us. You know, and we still had Aliyu last year, and we had Thoro Farson as our kind of two guys that would play behind Corey. And this year they'll be playing behind Sebas. But it depends, you know, Thor, there's obviously clear rumors out there, and we'll see where that goes. But having said that, if that does happen, then we'll have to be on the lookout to try to bring in one more. But I don't see us bringing in someone that we think will supplant Sebas at this point. At this point, we'll be bringing in someone that would be, if Thor happened to move on, then we would probably replace him. And for us, our number two would be Aliyu. That would be kind of our guy that we go to next.
Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad graciously joining us here in 2024. Really appreciate it. We always get a lot of great feedback when Pat comes on the show. You know, how much of this maybe becomes about the Dynamo maybe adapting in some ways and being more flexible with Sebas, maybe tactically, maybe this is a better team now and a little more defined attacking-wise, that maybe, you know, you guys do things that might suit his strengths more. Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, well, we certainly have, we'll get a lot more service. You know, Corey got a lot more service than he did certainly at the beginning of the year and in 2022, for that matter. But you know, I have to give Corey credit. He had a great season last year for us, and one of his strengths is that he stretched the line for us. You know, he ran behind, he pressed well, he put in a lot of extra work, a lot of the dirty work, which we know that's not Sebastian's strength. You know, we're hoping he can put a little more in than he showed last season and preseason, absolutely. But at the end of the day, we know that's not his strength, and asking him to do something that's not his strength, that's unfair. Like, but what we do know is in the penalty box, he has good movement, he's a great finisher, and we think with the group that we have now, that if we can provide him the service, he can bury those chances for us. So we'll have to adapt, you know, and that's Ben and his new staff, Juan Guerra, and the rest of the staff from last year. They're going to have to look at tweaks and different ways to try to make sure that we're, you know, defensively, we're not getting exposed, and we're able to work well with Sebastian.
Do you call him a specialist, Pat? I mean, really, he's a guy that applies the final touch, right?
He's a goal scorer. You know, that's we knew he was a good box player. We knew he wasn't, you know, his strength wasn't going and pressing and running behind, but we knew in the box, you get him service and score goals. He's not a guy that's going to dribble past someone and create his own shot, but he is a guy that if you can get the ball to him in the penalty box, he's dangerous. You know, he's good with his head. He's good with both feet. And he's, you know, he scored some good goals for us in 2022, which I would say was a much weaker team than what we have now. But, you know, it's up to him. It's up to him, and it's up to us to make sure we put him in good position to score goals.
I think a lot of people are rooting for him, obviously, and you obviously thought a lot about him as a player. He had 13 goals on a team where he didn't get a lot of service, and I think we saw that. So it's exciting, the potential that he can come back and get it done. Pat Onstad, Dynamo General Manager. How much are you banking on the growth and maturity and potentially getting more goals out of Aliyu and Nelson Quiñones based on the situation right now?
A fair amount. We hope that could improve. We You know, we feel, you know, it depends what happens with Coco. I think there's no secret out there that an offer came in at the right price that we would move him. But at the same token, we also hope he can be a little more productive in the final third when he gets in these really good areas that he's capable of getting into. We're going to need a little bit more production. At the same token, you know, we'll still keep looking to try to improve the squad. We don't have a ton of cap space to go after, you know, a big TAM guy, but what we do have ability to do is go after a younger player, so a YPS player, and we have, you know, Ted has been pretty gracious with the spend that he's willing to take out. We'll call it discretionary spend to go after this guy, so we have some targets that we've been moving forward with, and I'd like to think we'll try to get one more attacking piece by the time the season starts, and then we'll have to see where we're at. We still might have one or two more moves up our sleeve.
In the case of Sebas, is this potentially, you know, a little tough love, but also combined with some massaging?
I don't know if it's tough love. I think, like, the season, his 2023 year is not where he expected it to go, nor did we. You know, so I think both parties have to hold their hands up and take some ownership in how the season went for him last year. You can't just point the finger at Sebastian and say, this is your fault, you know, you didn't do your job. That's unfair. That's unfair to a player. You know, we're all complicit in how his season went last year. Did we give him enough opportunity? Did we set him up and put him in the right spaces to create things? You know, I think we have to hold our hand up for that. Did, you know, from a management standpoint, did myself and Asher Mendelson, did we manage him properly? Did we give him the right information? Did we help support him? You know, this is a group effort, and I think we've been pretty clear with everybody in our organization that we're going to succeed as a group and we'll fail as a group. So for us to point a finger at somebody is completely unfair. But at the same token, as long as we do this as a group, we also individually have to be accountable too. You know, if we're not doing our jobs, then we're going to hold our hand up too and look in the mirror first and foremost. So, and I think Sebastian's done that, and he's excited to come back, and his attitude's been great so far.
So when you talk with the staff, do you guys say, look, we got to do a deeper dive on this man, Sebastian Ferreira, to get the best out of him? We're thin in this position right now, and we got to look at this from every angle possible.
Yep, 100%. I mean, from our video guys to Paul Caffrey in the high performance department, Craig Devine in the sports medicine department, you know, we are all. And it's not just Sebastian. We do that with every player. You know, how do we make sure? And I have to give those two departments in particular, you know, and this includes Ben, obviously, as a coach, because it's his decision on who he plays. But, you know, Coco Caristia played 60 games last year, including his international and with us. You know, Arturo played the most games he's played in his career, you know, 50-plus games. Hector played, I think it was 50 games on the nose, I think, over the course of the season, you know, at 33 years old. And that's a credit to the whole team around him. You know, that's not just the player, but it's also, you know, it's a player who has to put a lot into it, but it's every department in the club. And, you know, we have to look at that for every player. And Sebastian certainly is one of our players, and we want to make sure that he's ready to perform when he goes on the field on Saturday.
Pat Onstad joining us, Dynamo General Manager. This is great conversation here. All right, you're not getting the offer you want for Coco Caristia. He still has a desire to go overseas. He is a highly professional young man, Panamanian, huge centerpiece of that team. But how long does the dance go on for you? Because he's probably holding up you making other potential moves. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, a little bit. But at the same token, you know, he's on the field for us. He's an excellent player, and he fits in well, especially the way that Ben has kind of molded the style in a 3-4-3, you know, a 3-box-3. He fits really well in that position, you know. So I think he's enjoying that role. It's not necessarily what he thinks is his best role. But I think for him as a player, too, he's also getting an opportunity to be an attacking piece that normally he wouldn't get those opportunities. So he's enjoying that kind of part of it. But, you know, listen, the transparency between certainly him, his agent, and us it's been really a pleasure to work with everybody. And we have a price that we completely agree on. We're all on the same page on what it's going to take. To your point, I think eventually it goes, okay, if this isn't going to work, then how does it work for Coco to stay here long term? And, you know, that's something that those discussions will probably have to take place, you know, after this window closes, and we'll see where those things go.
So you made it very clear that there's likely not going to be anything big that potentially happens here until maybe the summer transfer window. But you must feel pretty good about the solidity of this team, how good defensively it's been, how much better it's improved possession-wise to get you through to the summer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really like our group defensively. I think has been excellent. You know, Eric Shevchenko coming here has been nice kind of anchor for us, an organizer. Mikel Dos Santos has been a pleasant surprise. I think he's really developed into an excellent left center back for us. And then the one thing I think that does get overlooked a bit with our group is, you know, I can go on with Franco Escobar, Griffin's maturity, but we're very fortunate with both Steve Clark and Andrew Tarbell. You know, Steve brings some great leadership to us, and as a goalie, as probably, I would argue, is the best player, the best goalkeeper with the ball at his feet in the league, and really allows us to play the way we need to play in midfield. He allows us to progress the ball to Hector and to Artur, and then we kind of get our attack going. So he's been great. Stuff. And then, of course, Andrew Tarbell had a wonderful run in the Open Cup. So I really like our group from a defensive standpoint. You know, offensively, I think we keep working on our structure and how we're going to break teams down. The one thing we know is going to happen is we're going to have a target on our back. There's teams out there that are going to overload the midfield and make it difficult for us to, you know, to dominate the midfield. And so then what's the next step for us? How do we go and punish teams once they start committing extra bodies in the middle of the field? How do we go and punish them? Is it through wide plays? Is it through getting behind quickly? You know, we'll have to define that, and we'll have to make sure we work on that in the preseason.
Pat, real quick, because we're up on closing it off tonight, I wanted to sneak this one in because I'm very fascinated with this. Franco Escobar did a great team thing moving to the left back position, did a wonderful job, was brought here to be the right back. We didn't know the emergence of Griffin Dorsey was going to occur. How does he feel about going at left back again? I mean, is that something that has to be managed as well, knowing athletes the way you know them?
Yeah, I mean, he's a competitive guy. I mean, that's one of the probably his best attributes, is he is so competitive. And he wants to, you know, he feels he's still his best strength is a right back. But having said it, there's a reason why that guy wins everywhere he goes, is he's also willing to sacrifice for the good of the team. And he knows right now, Griffin Dorsey had an excellent season, and we're trying to get him to get forward a lot and get our width and our depth from that position, which, you know, Dash Franco to be the guy that runs behind and do that high-speed running, he's just not able to do that. He's able to do a lot of other things that Griffin can't do. So for us right now, the best position for him is left back. Yeah, there'll be discussions about when he's going to get the opportunity as a right back. But he's a guy we certainly know we're a better team when he's on the field.
Pat, you're the best. Beautiful timing. You finished perfectly here so we can get to our break. Thank you so much for coming on. It's a big effort to do it right after the event. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Glenn. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That's Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. We finish it up tonight here. Spotify, Google, Apple. That's where you get the podcast. ESPN 975. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram @GlennDavisSoc. For producer Guillermo, remember, soccer matters.